It's the Reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar. Yes, you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P. R-H-A-P. Reality TV Happy Hour. Reality TV Happy Hour.
What's going on, everybody? Do not adjust your dials. Jordan Parhar is not here, but I am Mike Bloom, and this is the Reality TV Happy Hour. We are back, as always, to talk about Big Brother 18, week 10, I believe it is. We just passed the three-quarter mark. I may be the variable, but I am surrounded by three constants. I will use the nickname that was coined by them last week. We have the Gay, the Bay, and AK. All here to talk about Big Brother 18. Let's go in order. I just talked with him yesterday about RuPaul's Drag Race. He is ready to sissy that drone. It is Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how you doing?
I didn't expect the RuPaul's Drag Race moniker when we were coming onto a Big Brother Life Beats podcast, but I'm thankful for it. Hey, Mike, how you doing? Nice to see you. You're the new Jordan Parhar. I love you.
Perfect. I mean, I'm older than Jordan Parhar, so I don't know what that says about me.
All right.
We are joined by the Bay. You saw him last night on the podcast with Glenn. He has currently racked his brain for the past 24 hours writing obsequious amounts of fan fiction about what would have happened if Glenn won the first head of household. It's Taryn Armstrong.
Yes, that was so exciting talking to Glenn. I thought he did really well. I thought it was a very entertaining podcast. And I think that Rob was very enthused throughout the entire thing. So that's the most important part.
It was really the equivalent of him, you know, meeting one of his heroes, and all you put heroes in loose terms, and that he was impersonating him for the entire summer. And we are joined by a man who was unfortunately in absentia last week, but he has bribed his internet service provider with at least $5,000 to be here with us tonight. Welcome back, Alex Kidwell.
Yeah, well, that'd be a poor investment, I think. It wasn't even the internet's fault, really. I had two webcams crap out on me last week. I don't know how that's even possible, but I'm back. I got a new one. Lucky number three. Here we are. Let's go.
Let's see if, like Victor's time in the Big Brother 18 house, will number three be the one that gets Alex all the way. Of course, we are not alone here tonight. We are being joined by a healthy crowd here at robhasawebsite.com. We are answering your questions live, so please tweet us with hashtag Happy Hour. We'd love to answer any and all questions about Big Brother 18. Just so you know, if you have not seen this podcast or listened to this podcast at all this season, we are talking about live feed stuff that has happened throughout the week here on Big Brother 18. That being said, there are going to be a multitude of spoilers if you're show only, but come on, these guys are fantastic. Stay. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion this week anyway, so you're not going to be, you know, finding out too much, especially if you listen to the spoiler section from yesterday. So come hang out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I am certainly excited, even though it's a little bit of a duller week, I would say, after the nominations and Vito in particular. It should be a lot of fun talking with you guys. Let's dive into the inevitability of it all. Brent, tell me, we had the veto ceremony today. What has transpired?
Squat. That's what's transpired. Nicole left the nominations intact. It's going to be Michelle or Paul going home on Thursday. I am heartened as a fan of Paul by the fact that every time Nicole comes back to the idea of, well, maybe it's a good idea to get Paul out of the house, she comes back to the fact that if she does that, then Michelle's going to be in the house with James and Natalie, and it's a threesome, and Victor would probably go over with them because then he'd be pissed at Nicole and Corey. So there's just no way out. So even though Nicole is want to second guess herself, I think I'm heartened by the fact that there's just no way out for Nicole. She's going to have to evict Michelle this week if she wants to stay in the game.
All right. So Alex, is it a pretty foregone conclusion that Michelle is going? And if so, are James and Natalie onto this idea whatsoever? Or are we expecting them to be completely blindsided come Thursday?
Yeah, pretty foregone conclusion. And like Brent just said, I mean, even if you're Nicole and you start to question if there's even reasons to do the other thing, it's slapping you in the face. James, Natalie, and Michelle are such an obvious three at this point that there's just no other play for her. I mean, Michelle has done herself no favors by just alienating all but James and Natalie in the house at this point in the game. She's really kind of pigeonholed herself, and they're all kind of on a sinking ship as a result. Natalie is the one person who has demonstrated in the past she's perceptive enough to at least pay attention to who's in what room with who, which you would think would be something everyone's kind of on top of. So Natalie sees that Paul seems awfully relaxed and has spent a lot of time with Nicole and Corey, and at least that's made her raise an eyebrow a time or two. James had no idea, and Michelle has been sleeping all week, so there's a lot of cluelessness. James is kind of the guy here, I think, who wants to just bury his head in the sand and wake up next week and hope everything's okay, but it's not going to happen, bud. Sorry.
Taryn, do you think there's going to be a bona fide blindside going on, considering that the one guy who usually decides to prevent blindsides and tell everyone what's going on before the eviction does not know what's going to happen at the eviction?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, Nicole had planned on telling James and Natalie before the end of the week that this was going to happen, that she was going to ultimately take out Michelle instead of Paul. She hasn't talked about it in a little while, so I'm not sure if she still plans on doing that, but I have to assume that she will ultimately revert back to that plan, because it doesn't really make sense to blindside them, especially if you're thinking that it's a potentially a double eviction week. So I really do think that Nicole will eventually tell James and Natalie at the very least, who will probably tell Michelle.
Yeah, if we know nothing about these house guests, we know that they don't know how to do good TV. So I'm certain that Nicole will not be in the position to break a tie. It's gonna be 4-0, maybe a sympathy vote from Natalie, but it's gonna be a vote to evict Michelle on Thursday. You know, second verse, same as the first, whatever. These people don't know how to do this on TV. They're no Dan Gieseling, Mike.
So I want to eulogize Michelle a little bit, because she's had an interesting trajectory, and maybe RHAP might have jinxed her a bit when, Alex, you've been the one that's kind of been touting the Michelle train wreck story the entire season, but everyone else was saying as the time passed, oh, maybe Michelle has a chance to possibly win this. Alex, I'm going to throw out a broad statement, and you can agree or disagree with me if you want. Do you think America's Care Package giving Michelle the co-HOH ruined her game?
It definitely didn't help. Michelle has demonstrated this season, and it's the reason I said in week 4, I think, like, this girl can never win the game. She hadn't demonstrated an iota of social game, really. I mean, all she had done to that point is, you know, she got herself in a good position, but then she kind of like sits on high and talks a lot of crap about other people. And it's just, you know, you have to live with these people. Like, I get this. The strategy of the game is a big element, but you're never going to get the votes at the end if people think you're a despicable human being, or you're just always the person to take the low blow or to insert yourself into a conversation where you're not wanted. Michelle, this is par for the course, and it has been for most of the season. You know, she really did have that turn, and I think a big part of it is, like, finally something was happening. Somebody decided to make a move in the game. Natalie was a part of it. People like Natalie. People like James. Michelle got on that train. So, yeah, it was easy to see, like, her momentum switch and fans get behind that. But again, here we see, now that she is on the right side of the numbers, she wants to be complacent and kind of, you know, sit up in the lofty position and just talk crap about people. So I think Michelle is really only good when she knows she's in trouble and has to scramble. The problem is, she thinks the answer is always like a big Godfrey speech that blows up other people. From Big Brother Canada 3, the thing about Godfrey is he would make these big speeches that would bury people. And then after the live show was over, he would go into damage control mode. He would go talk to these people and say, look, that was just for TV. Like, he had all these things. Michelle doesn't do any of that. She literally makes these huge speeches, and then, like, it's just left to assume for that person, like, well, she must hate me, because she's never come and even explained why she did that. So it's a big, big gaps here in terms of what she's trying to accomplish and how it's actually taking off throughout the course of this thing.
She does the opposite of that. Like, where, like, after she called Nicole out, Nicole tried to talk to her so many times. And, like, every time Michelle was basically like, yeah, I guess I might, like, regret saying that, but you are kind of a snake. So it was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, she's got jokes about snake emojis. It's like, dude, this isn't helping you. You know, it may be funny, it may be cathartic for you in that moment, but it is not a long-term strategy.
I do want to talk about the conversation that was shown between Paul, and specifically the conflict between Paul and Michelle that was shown on Sunday's show, and obviously was to a lengthened version on the live feeds, and specifically the lack of censorship that was used on certain words. Brent, we got your take a little bit on it on the Thursday show. Watching it happen on Sunday, do you feel like they edited it right in terms of painting how the conflict happened and taking a side? And I'll put that in quotations.
I mean, I think they did a fair job. I mean, obviously, they're not going to show, the C word on national television. But I think that, it's always tough when people who are considered fan favorites do things that are not necessarily fan favorite behaviors. You know, I mean, that's always tough. I mean, I didn't love seeing Paul behave like that when we were talking about it on the Thursday show. I didn't love it then either. My love for Paul sort of supersedes that. And I realized he was trying to, there was a purpose. There was a method to his madness. He was trying to get into a fight there to make it seem like he was more with Corey and Nicole. Again, going into the live show, I thought it worked. So I thought the means were justified, but obviously not. It didn't work, but it was still thrilling strategy. I think he probably could have done it without using the C word, but you know, what are you going to do? You're living in a house with these people. Emotions run high. It's not real life. That's what I want to say to people. Most of all, it's not real life. Okay. These people, they're coming out of the house and they're in a pressure cooker right now. When they get back out, they're usually very lovely people, but you put them in a house, you know, everybody's playing for $500,000, then things are going to come out that you're not proud of. And I'm sure Paul was not proud of that.
I just want to add that it's not a word that you like to hear people say, especially not, you know, a man addressing a woman. However, like if you can, and you know, some people can't, and I understand if you can't, but if you can take a step back and think about its impact strategically, Paul was trying to, you know, lay into James in a public way, actually got James to bury himself in that conversation, if we recall. And Michelle is trying to basically save him there by cutting him off. By dropping that word, he shocks Michelle so much that she leaves the room, and then he's able to continue to do what he was doing and accomplish what he's trying to accomplish. So while I don't defend the use of it, you can see how by going to the most offensive thing he could think of in that moment, he did kind of like shock her into backing off a little bit, which strategically has value.
I love that 18 seasons into Big Brother, it has become a show to the point of where we are legitimately discussing the strategic value of using the C word when instigating a fight with somebody.
Well, that's what you get when you got me on the show, man. And that's why I'm never going to be America's favorite anytime soon.
You might be
in the running though, Alex. You know, I think you're certain to be in the running. Julie's definitely going to call your name, be one of those top three people.
Yeah, I'll win the majority with like 27% of the vote or whatever Corey did.
Plurality wins overall. There is something sort of staying along this topic that I do want to discuss that was brought up on that aforementioned Thursday show, where Ian Terry, who I thought was a great guest, talked about this idea of like Big Brother breaking all the boundaries and how he feels like the show has really been using that mentality the past 5 or 6 seasons, and that's led to a lot more ugliness that's been shown on the live feeds. Taryn, I'd love to get your take on it. I mean, do you think it's a product of philosophy? Do you think it's a product of casting? Do you think it's just something random? We have had things like, you know, Erica talking about G on Big Brother 4. But it does seem to me that these types of incidents are much more rampant on modern seasons than they were back in the day.
It's really hard to tell because I know that they were pretty rampant back in the day as well. Like I can think of like a few different things off the top of plenty of things in season 4. You know, season 6, we had everything with Michael. It seems like this is something that kind of happens a lot, where like there are these kinds of accusations being thrown out. I mean, think about like it's Big Brother 8 with Evil Dick, obviously. I really think that the main difference now is that social media is such a big thing that
right.
the rage about it, like the backlash has gotten much bigger, and it makes it seem like it's a much bigger and much more rampant thing. But honestly, I think it might have even been more rampant in the old days.
Right. But yeah, nowadays, right, everyone can immediately express their opinion about it. The opinion is available and publicly accessible. Somebody reads some of the things that are being tweeted. They write an article for, you know, Deadspin or Updraft or whatever the hell. And then before you know it, like, stuff goes viral.
Yeah, like we think Pauly is bad, but Robert from season 4 was like atrocious compared to like way, way, way worse than Pauly could ever be.
I would love to see a season of Big Brother that takes the most vile people and puts them in a house, and then they just blow up the house after a week, and then everyone's much happier about it.
I don't think that would be fair, because the season 9 alliance would just run the table. We have to have
Big Brother The Purge coming to CBS All Access in the year 2020. Let's talk a little bit about the BB bribe, because it has definitely raised some eyebrows. I think none of us were really onto the idea. Taryn, I remember when I was on the podcast with you and Rob, we had joked for the lulz, wouldn't it be funny if Corey had won the Big Brother bribe? Because it would be funny to see a dumb guy do something with the money. It actually happened. The springtime for Hitler of America's care package actually happened. Brent, is there anything besides a plurality and him being a third party candidate? Or is there any sort of other reasoning you can apply as to how he ended up winning this?
I hesitate to say this, but I've sort of like led into this in a previous podcast. If you look at Victor and Paul, I think Paul is Armenian and Victor is Latin. They may be perceived by some people in America as the others. Okay. They're part of the minority, and Corey looks like he's part of the majority. He looks like he's a white, blonde, tall, good looking, attractive young man. And I think there are people that might be inclined just to vote for him because they look like them. And I don't think that's great. I think that's America at its worst. But in the year of 2016 and in the year of Donald Trump, I'm just going to say it, I think there are many people who would vote for people like Corey, who are a big ball of nothing, over people like Paul and Victor, who, you know, look like the others. And I know that's not very popular to say, and that's not really where this podcast is supposed to go, but I think there's an element of that on top of the fact that, you know, Victor and Paul were probably splitting the votes, and probably Corey won with, you know, 38% of the vote. That's probably likely, but it's still unfathomable to me that two people who are really putting their heart and soul into Big Brother, like Paul and Victor, somehow didn't win America's care package again. Like, it was literally just the two of them and Corey, and they still couldn't win. Like, how is that possible? I don't know. I'm still looking for a reason. If you guys disagree with me, tweet me on Twitter, but I definitely think that's a part of it.
America doesn't trust beards. And also, unless it comes accompanied by like a soft Southern accent, like that.
All right.
Yeah.
But the Southern accent in this case is Corey. So, you know, the double down of, you know, hitting the whole Southern and beard, you know, Venn diagram. Corey's got one and Paul and Victor have the other. So,
well, I guess if that's any indication, then that means if you separate the qualities, you would take Southern accent above beard. We sort of now like power ranked the qualities you need to be America's favorite player. Camo is probably still at the top, considering that Donnie and James both wore camo, but Southern below that, then I guess the beard. Taryn, we did find out over the course of the past few days what Corey is planning to do with the bribe. What is the plan at the moment?
I mean, they've gone back and forth. They had a plan where they were going to bribe Victor $5,000 to vote Michelle out as kind of a way to, like, A, ensure that he actually does it, because Nicole is slightly concerned that something's being played, or she's being played right now by Victor, and that he's really working with James and Natalie, and he's going to vote Paul out. And so that would be a way to ensure that he doesn't do that. And then also, because she knows that's kind of paranoid, to just kind of further solidify that relationship and let them know that they're serious about working with them to the final four, so that they don't betray them next week when they maybe probably will win HOH. But
well,
another part of the plan is that Corey is just like, well, can I just give it to you though?
This is what you get, America.
I mean, really, like, yeah, we're gonna give it to Victor to make sure Victor's not gonna vict Paul. Like, I almost would rather see Corey give it to someone for doing something stupid at this point. Like, hey, it would really help my game strategically if I were to give you $5,000 for you to eat that bee over there in the corner. Like, I'm ready for that at this point. This is so
I have
stupid.
To say though, I was really glad that the care package actually in hindsight did go to Corey, because, you know, with Nicole being HOH and deciding to make a deal with Paul and Victor to get Michelle out, if anything came into play that could upset that balance where she was like, oh my God, I don't have all the power anymore. Oh my God, something weird could happen here. If the care package had gone to Paul or Victor, Nicole might have second guessed herself here. Like, maybe she thinks there's something attached to it. Maybe there's something secret in the diary room. Like, Nicole can literally think of anything that something's going to screw her. So I was kind of glad the care package went to Corey, because now Corey and Nicole have all the power. They don't have to worry about, you know, Paul and Victor betraying them. They can just target Michelle, know they have all the power, and move on to next week.
Yeah, I would think initially that there is a little bit of schadenfreude in this, in that at first glance, I would think, oh, this is great, because now they're going to think that they are the favorites. And now they're going to see that that is definitely not true once they leave the house. But actually, and again, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. It is not the overall majority, vast majority opinion on this. But I have found a lot of people have actually come around on Corey and Nicole this week, considering that they were kind of bottoming out in terms of popularity the past couple of weeks. Taryn, I know on the Big Brother RHAP patron group on Facebook, you kind of gave a very circulatory theory as to how Nicole and Corey became popular once more, and I'd like to hear it.
Well,
it's a good one.
Basically, how the fandom works is like you hate certain people and you like certain people, and then based on who those people want out, you shift around who you're rooting for. And so everyone was really hating Pauly and everyone was really hating Nicole for a long time. And you know, the height of Natalie's popularity came when she finally kind of spearheaded this movement to take them down. And Paul and Victor shot up in popularity as well because they got in on that plan with Natalie to take Pauly down. Then when Natalie and James decided to turn on Paul and Victor, they lost a bunch of popularity. And Paul and Victor, by being in on this plan that Natalie spearheaded, were now taking all of the good omens, the good feelings from it. And now everyone loved Paul and Victor and hated Natalie and James. And then Paul and Victor have now teamed up with Natalie or with Nicole and Corey, who are going after the hated Natalie and James. And now all of a sudden, Nicole and Corey are back in the good graces of many people because they're working with the people that are in the good graces because of the fact that they took down Pauly and him being associated with Nicole. In many ways, Nicole is benefiting from her own unpopularity right now.
Yeah, I mean, important to remember that when the five was made, the Victor, Paul, Natalie, James, Michelle five. Oh, well, I guess it was a six with Bridget at the time. But when that was locked down, like that was supposed to be like a long term thing. And I think a lot of fans loved that group and saw that six. It was like, oh, yes, I like this final six. Like, let's have these six take out Pauly and Corey and Nicole in succession. Everyone was on board for that. Fandom seemed pretty universally excited for that. James and Nat, and actually Paul and Victor benefited the least by jumping onto that plan. I mean, really, it was Meech, Bridget, and Natalie that were, you know, needing to make a move. Paul and Victor had weeks where they still could have kind of potentially played, you know, with the guys. The guys thing was still intact. So the fact that Paul and Victor took that, you know, risk and were willing to, you know, potentially blow up their own games to go with James and Natalie and Michelle, only for those guys to turn on them the very next week, I think for a lot of fans that wanted to see that group run it to the end, that was, what are you doing? You're ruining everything kind of a moment.
Brent, have you seen or remembered a time or a group of people in Big Brother history that have been so up and down in terms of popularity as Nicole and Corey these past few weeks?
I mean, I'm sure there have been. Like, there were times in Big Brother 15 where I simultaneously hated and loved Andy. Like, you know, I loved him when he was with Helen, and then I hated him when he started taking control. I hated Gina Marie in the beginning for obvious reasons, and then I sort of was rooting for her at the end as the lovable underdog. So, ew. I mean, like, I can go all over the place. I'm sorry. I can go all over the place. Look, I will own this, all right? I am one of the people that Taryn is talking about in his circular logic theory. Like, I fit in totally with that. And the reason why is because of this. Paul is my favorite right now, okay? And I didn't always used to love him either, but he's really, really shown a lot of appetite for the game. And not only that, he really loves the game. Like all of the energy and performance that he put into that Secret Service thing, like, he didn't have to do that. Like, there were times where he could have just phoned it in, and he was absolutely awesome, okay? And I love the fact that he is so willing to just play balls out. I mean, that's how I would play if I was on Big Brother. So the fact that this circular logic sort of works, where Nicole was, you know, she was unpopular and now she's popular because of the unpopularity things that she did. Well, that's just an aspect of being a tool. She's a tool, all right. It's an aspect of being a tool of Paul. I mean, right now, Nicole is a tool of Paul. And so thus, I am rooting for Nicole secondarily to my rooting for Paul. But I think most of fandom is with me on this, that we didn't really care for Nicole because she really wasn't playing the game. Now she's being sneaky. She's making a move. I like the fact that she's making a move. And on top of that, she's making it with somebody who I support. So that's why I love her again.
And again, go ahead.
The interesting thing is, you know, now if next week, you know, James wins HOH and takes out Paul, are we now rooting for Nicole and Corey? You know, if Victor goes out the next week, are we now rooting for Nicole and Corey to win the game over James and Natalie, who took out our favorites?
Yep. I think with Paul, you've got a guy who started, in such a bad place. He was clearly in, he's Jose's boy. This is a guy that should have been gone early. We really thought he would be. He's really scrapped on a level this season that nobody else has even come close. You got a lot of people playing very complacent, lackadaisical games. You've got Paul, who's just working overtime, probably does more than he should. He's almost Tony-esque in that he is doing so much that he's like, making a mistake and correcting his mistake before anyone can even catch up to it. So
can't wait for Paul to start building the friend shack in the storage room and just hiding out and spying on people.
Well, that's why I wanted to see him win the bribe and have it be anonymous so he could start talking about his bag of tricks and like the things he has that nobody knows he has and stuff. That would have been cool. But and this is a guy who, again, Paul and Victor really haven't betrayed anybody. They've been kind of the guys who have been trying to get a game plan that's long-term successful all season. And it's hard not to identify with them at some point because the rug keeps getting pulled out from under them. It's really not them being skeezy or manipulative. It's just other people thinking the grass is greener and turning on them. And somehow here they are still being resilient. I think it's totally understandable to see why fans have gotten behind that.
I can't believe we've gotten to the point on Big Brother 18 where we have now compared Paul to Dan Gysling and Tony Vlachos. We are grasping at straws, people. However, I cannot think of a better group of people to grasp straws with. I do want to stay on the
Paul trail. A lot of hours of content to fill, Mike. A lot of
Exactly. I want to stay on the Paul trail a little bit. Did you guys catch the extended monologue that Paul had to the camera? I think it was over the weekend where he was essentially talking through each person in the game.
I was going to say, which one?
He does that a lot.
Tara, do you want to describe the one that I found was the one where he was basically bringing up the cleanliness of each of the house guests. So though going into a little bit more broader detail about them as well.
I'm willing to admit I don't sit through all of Paul's monologues. It's not something that I always have the stomach for. I think Alex might be more of an expert on these.
All right, Alex, I'll throw it to you then.
With the cleanliness. I guess just, that certain... Brent, do you remember specifics?
Like, I don't remember this one either. Like, Mike, I think you're the only one who remembers.
I definitely did, but he's been every morning been speaking to the camp.
Exactly. So, Mike, what did you hear that you love so much?
I just think it was interesting in that his final part of his monologue, he essentially went through each and every person and talked about their cleanliness. He talks at the end about what I think everyone had kind of theorized about him the entire season was that, I'm not really Mr. Friendship pissed sketch. I know from the beginning I couldn't really have the conversations I wanted to have with these types of people. So I decided to kind of put on this persona. And this is what has kind of brought me around on Paul. I'm definitely in Brent's camp where I could not stand the guy with his faux rocker package the very first night of the show. And even, a couple weeks ago when I was on with Tara, and I was still kind of towing the line a bit. And now I've kind of been sent over the wall in a way where I think that he is definitely one of the buoyed personalities in this torrential sea that has been Big Brother 18. And I feel like this is a good example of watching him be an authentic person, which very interestingly contrasts what he was calling Michelle a few days beforehand.
Yeah, I do remember what you're talking about. I not the cleanliness part, but afterwards, I definitely remember because a lot of people were talking about this. A lot of people saying, that's BS, Paul. This is totally who you are. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I remember preseason he talked a lot about listen, I gotta tone myself down when I get into the house. People can't see the real me because they won't like the real me. I need to tone myself down. And it's interesting because, the charismatic wild card, they often say this, right? Zach said it too. And when Zach Rantz went into the house, he also was a crazy person. I think that Paul is definitely a little bit of a crazy person. I think that this house might be a slightly amplified version of himself just because we're seeing him all the time. But I think this is who Paul is. And I think that if he is kind of putting a front on, it's not a good one because I don't think it's benefiting his game a whole lot. What I do like about it is that he is thinking in a way that is listen, I am playing a game right now. I am trying to alter people's perception of me in whatever way that works, in whatever way that's possible for me. And that's something that a lot of other people in this game are not doing. They're just being themselves and hoping that things work out. And that's why Paul is able to come up with these plans, even though they come too late to him, to try and save Victor, where it's like he's doing everything right and nobody else could have thought of that but Paul in this house. So that's what I like about him. He's constantly working and he's constantly trying to find some sort of angle.
It's also the part of him that worries me, though, because he is so much better than everybody else when it comes to talking like that and, you know, thinking strategically and thinking outside the box, that it can worry people. I remember earlier this week, or, you know, this week starting on Thursday, when Nicole became head of household, when he was talking about the possibility of, you know, either backdooring James or putting James or Natalie on the block. You know, he was willing to be a pawn. He was totally cool with that. But here's also an idea over here. And the more he talks and the more he just, you know, lets people know what's inside his own brain, it freaks people out. And I'm, you know, he can be a little overbearing at times. I don't think he realizes this. I think, you know, this, he has a little bit of me in him where he just loves to hear himself talk. And so then, like, the people around him, like, they are too afraid to say, you know, bitch, shut up. So, like, nobody can say bitch, shut up to Paul in the house. So he just, like, loves to hear himself talk. And that could cripple his game at some point. I think he's going to be okay this week because Nicole's hands are tied, with as far as getting Michelle out and leaving an obvious threesome in the game to compete against Corey and the head of household. However, if her hands were not tied, I would really worry about his stability this week.
Alex, we have not even talked about our returnee here. Our three-time person that I mentioned at the very top, Elfit Vic, he is back. Speaking from a good TV perspective, was this the best possible outcome? It's fun to see Victor back for the lulls of him going through the revolving door, but looking ahead to the end game of Big Brother, is this the best optimal solution we could have seen moving forward?
I don't know. You know, it depends on what you're looking for, I suppose. You know, if you were really hoping to see Paul, you know, survive a battle back, this is huge for Paul. I mean, this really gives him a leg to stand on that he didn't have as soon as Victor left. But I could definitely see, you know, the argument for either Davon or Paulie having been more of a kind of catalyst for, you know, an explosion, so to speak, when they came back. The thing is, though, like, it does seem like there's a degree of, you know, like, the jurors came back and they had the opportunity to talk to the players and they were on there. Like, there wasn't, you know, people blowing up people's games. Like, it's just not a lot of gameplay this season that hasn't been exposed to everyone. Like, everyone knows what happened. There's no, you know, secret bombshell to be dropped from jury house, really. So I don't know that any scenario was really going to yield some massive, you know, game-changing power shift where all of a sudden next week we like see Davon running the house or something.
I mean, I think that Victor coming back ultimately might, you know, enact some sort of big power shift, because this actually was very, very bad for Nicole and Corey ultimately, because, I mean, if you think about it, if Victor doesn't come back, granted, you know, anybody else that could have come back could have been worse for them. But, you know, Paulie might have been a better choice. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But if there is no buyback, then Victor's gone and they still get Paul and they still get Michelle out. And now it's final five and it's them three versus James and Natalie. It's a much better situation than having to contend with Paul and Victor. So this could be the thing that lets Paul get to the end, or maybe even Victor. But it also could be the thing that prevents Nicole and Corey from winning this game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're in a pretty good position, though, because, I mean, I don't
think they still are, for sure.
Do you see it? Let me ask this question to you guys. Do you see any way that you think that Nicole or Corey could be evicted next week?
I could, you know,
potentially. I mean, we've seen Paul and Victor, you know, especially Paul. We've seen Paul, you know, be very successful in, you know, convincing people of things for the last few weeks now. And I think Nicole and Corey have done everything they can to try to make sure that they are the pair in the middle next week, that James and Natalie would target Victor and Paul and Victor and Paul would target James and Natalie. But we've certainly seen Paul navigate himself out of that spot before. I could definitely imagine a scenario where he's able to maybe convince James and especially Natalie that they were, you know, certainly candidates this week, even if they didn't actually go up.
I do want to pose that question, because do you think, and I'll shoot this to you, Terrence, that you're about to speak next week, let's say Mish is out of the picture right now, is it definitively 4-2, or do you think we are in a veritable 2-2 scenario?
It could conceivably be 2v2v2. You know, there are a few things going on here, right? So it's like Nicole and Corey are playing the middle, as we said, and that puts them in the best position in the house. And if James or Natalie wins HOH and Victor and Paul let them know, like, hey, look, Nicole and Corey, they're in the middle. They're playing the best game right now. Plus, think about, you know, Nicole won HOH and Vito. She's been throwing comps this whole season. She's going to win all these mental comps down the line. She's a bigger threat than we are. There's definitely a possibility that James or Natalie might target Nicole and Corey instead of Paul and Victor. Then we also have to consider the idea that maybe Paul and Victor win. I think right now they intend to stick with their plan to stay with Nicole and Corey. But after they win HOH, maybe they start thinking, hey, look, you know, James and Natalie over there, they're not very good competitors. We can probably beat them easier than we can beat Nicole and Corey, especially considering the fact that if we take a shot at James and Natalie, the surviving person will probably run to Nicole and Corey instead of us because we're the bigger threats. So maybe we need to take a shot at the bigger competitors right now in order to have a chance at winning the game. So there's definitely a lot of room to play with here that could spell doom for Nicole and Corey. They need to make sure that they play it right. So far, they've been doing all right. But they do need to be careful moving forward because it is a great spot to be in, but it is also a very dangerous one if you don't play it right.
And sorry, I just want to say really quickly what would happen if Corey wins head of household. I mean, I know statistically it probably wouldn't happen, but weirder things have happened in Big Brother, especially Big Brother Canada, where it was like 4-on-1, 3-on-1. I mean, who knows? Corey could win head of household. And then what happens? Like, are they going to stay? Like, I think Corey left to his own devices would probably stay true to Victor and Paul, but Nicole is probably pulling the strings in that relationship. And I can see her, if she has the power at final six, now you got to think, oh God, you know, Paul and Victor are really good competitors. I'd rather go to the final four with James and Natalie if I had my druthers. Now, I that would be interesting to see. I would like to see what would happen if Corey would win head of household. Of course, I would love to see Paul or Victor win head of household, but it would be interesting watching Corey as head of household at final six.
Yeah, I definitely think at this stage of the game, the pair to be least scared of by a country mile is James and Natalie, because Nicole really does bring it out. I mean, all the challenges down the stretch seem to be elements of memory / intelligence and athleticism. I mean, James's endurance prowess on the wall is irrelevant now. Those days are over. And, you know, you've got Corey with far and away the biggest stride in the house. So when it comes to like trying to do things in a time frame, like that's someone to be worried about. And then Nicole is just sharp. So yeah, if you're Paul and Victor and you win next week, like I really, really would stop and think about what are James and Natalie going to beat us in going forward.
So going to this pairs idea, because I feel like it is, as Brent brought up, I think it's very rare that we do see three pairs facing off against each other here. Let's go through each scenario where, let's say each of the pairs are in the final two. I don't know how feasible this is, but let's just see. Because I do want to get a feeling as to what you guys may think the jury would reward as the, you know, the power player of the pair, if you will. So we'll start with Taryn. Let's say Paul and Victor are in the final two. Who do you think's getting the win?
I do think this is probably the closest one, because I really think that Victor might have a fair amount of votes here. But I do think Paul ultimately will pull away with it. I think that especially if there's like some sort of jury moderator, they're going to come in and they're going to say like, who played the better game? And people are going to think like, all right, I mean, Paul didn't get evicted twice. Paul was always the more strategic player. Like, we got to give this to Paul, even though we love Victor as well. We got to give this to Paul out of respect for his game.
Oh, yeah, like, I don't know. I'm a little worried about the fact that Paul, like, people think Paul has money, and I don't know exactly how much money he has, but like maybe through his parents, or he has like a company, or, you know, whatever. Victor, on the other hand, has like, you know, a car that's like 20 years old and is living in some apartment somewhere. So there could be an aspect of that where they are like, well, you know, we'd rather give it to the guy who really needs it. We love Vic. He's a really super guy. And Victor is a really super guy. Like, I would love to see Victor win Big Brother. I really am over the fact that, and I don't know how the two of these guys feel, but I'm over the fact that, you know, thinking about, oh, I don't want a evicted house guest who returns to win Big Brother. I mean, we are past the point of no return on this, where this is part of Big Brother. It's always going to be a part of Big Brother unless they change it going into the future, and you're just going to have to deal with it. So if that's a part of Big Brother, then it seems like Victor has a fair argument to win, considering he absolutely battles his butt off, no pun intended, with the battle bag, to win his way back into the house and get to the final two. I think it would be an amazing story.
I did think it was kind of funny where in Victor's DR on Sunday, he's talking about, you tried to get me out once. You tried to. No, Victor, they didn't try. They succeeded. Yep. It happened.
You got me once. You got me twice.
Totally got me. And then you totally got me again. But here we are.
He said on the feeds that he's been shot twice. And he's like, but he's been patched up. He's like, just patch me up. I'm good to go. I've been shot twice. I'm good to go. It was a great analogy.
I think he's been killed twice. And now he's a zombie.
Yeah. He's showing as much resilience as 50 Cent is Victor in this season of Big Brother 18. Let's go Nicole and Corey. Alex, if Nicole and Corey are in the end, who do you think is getting the win?
I think Nicole is seen as having played a game, whereas Corey is seen as having kind of been attached. I think Paulie might be inclined to try to argue Corey had played more of a game than people think he has, but there's too many people in that jury house that didn't see him do anything, where he really just shared his strategic opinions with Nicole and maybe Paulie and really no one else, occasionally James, but like, you know, Bridget, Davon, Zakiya, there's going to be a lot of people in that house who aren't going to really feel any kind of compelling reasons for wanting to vote Corey as the winner. And these are all people who have had an alliance with Nicole. So they at least know Nicole was playing the game all the way through.
Yeah, I agree with that, with the caveat that this could be the one time in Big Brother history where the speeches might actually change the results. Because if Nicole spends the entire time talking about how wonderfully amazing Corey is and that he's the most amazing person that she's ever met and that he deserves to win, which honestly, I don't think she would do, but it wouldn't surprise me if she did it a little bit, that could really like lose any respect that the jury has for her, and we could see her just throw the money away at that point.
Of course, just as likely as Corey zoning out during the finale yes. and not delivering a speech at all.
So let's finish with our third pair here. I'll shoot it over to Brent. James and Natalie, they have played hide and seek. They've hid themselves away for a few weeks and have made their way to the end. Who's winning out of the two?
Wow, this is the toughest one. I think I disagree that I think that Paul and Victor is the toughest one. I think this is the toughest one because I think most of the fans would like to see Natalie as the winner. I think most fans would love to think that Natalie would be the winner. But in my heart of hearts, I do think that James would win out of the two of them if they managed to make it to the end. I just think that there are too many people on the jury that don't see Natalie having done anything. I mean, we see everything. We are omniscient. We get to see what Natalie's thinking, her perceptions, her ability to read players in the game. The jury, for the most part, hasn't really seen that. And they see James as protecting her. And the worst thing about Natalie's position, they see her as using James, that she's not really interested in him, that she's using him as a tool to further herself in the game. And this was her plan all along. She has no real affection for James. I don't think that there are many people on the jury who would want to reward someone like that, who is absolutely using a guy who probably most of them on their best day like.
Judging too harshly.
I agree. But still, I don't think that Natalie would look. She's going to have to find five votes. Tell me five votes that she can get. I don't see it. I think James has it clearly.
Well, shame she didn't have Bronte on that jury to girl power it up for her.
Why I think it's not the hardest one, because I do think that James has it. I think that you've hit the nail on the head where like that is going to be the argument, right? Like, oh, maybe James played more of the game. Maybe he was more strategic and maybe he protected Natalie to get to the end. But Natalie was playing him the whole time. And isn't that part of the game, too? Like, didn't she do that? Like, I can see it in my head, the jury deliberation. And the women, I think, are going to be arguing Natalie's case. And they're going to be saying, look, like, she deserves it. Like, she played, she used him as a shield. She used him to get to where she is now. And now she's going to, you know, take the money.
Never been a jury in the history of Big Brother that has rewarded the woman. And I agree with you. I know what you're saying. I agree that James would have the win. But I even if in our wildest dreams, if they actually thought about this and said, well, maybe that's part of the game that Natalie's using James and shouldn't we reward that? She's going to have to find five votes and you have to like the person. I don't think that you're going to be able to find five people on a jury who like Natalie and say, I want to reward that behavior in front of America and put her key in the box. Like, I really think you guys underestimate this. Like, you have not to put that person's pee in the box. I know you agree with me, but I'm just thinking in this alternate universe where she has a chance, like, I don't see any of them really wanting to put Natalie's key in the box and reward that behavior if they think that she was using James. Like, I don't see that as a possibility.
I think Bridget absolutely would. But, like, what I was going to say was that I think Devon is the key here. I think that Devon and the fact that she has a relationship with James and that she has a soft spot for James, the fact that she said, Victor, get James out of the house. If James still makes it to Final Two, I think Devon will be pleading his case, and I think that will be the nail in Natalie's coffin, because that's a woman vote that she could have otherwise got, and who may also control Zakiya's vote, and that, I think, is the reason why James is probably going to beat Natalie.
I'm so tired of depending on Devon for shit. I'm like, I'm serious. I really am. Like we depended on her like last season. Like, she went, we wanted good TV. She got evicted the second week. Then she comes back. She can't keep her mouth shut. She can't win a comp. Like, she can't do anything. The evil dick said on Twitter, like, she couldn't win a competition of one. And I agree with him. Like, she's terrible. And I her depending on Devon to have any semblance of reason in the jury. Like, I think she's just going to go with the guy that she really likes. And that's James. Like, whatever.
Yeah, the only way that someone can actually depend on Devon from now on is if she starts sponsoring adult diaper commercials. That's the only way anyone can actually depend on Devon.
I see what you did there. Okay.
So there we go. Wordplay. I did
just want to say really quickly that, I mean, the counterpoint is obviously you've got two people who will be staunch Natalie advocates, Bridget and Michelle. The counterpoint, nobody listens to these two girls at all. So this is where the dilemma comes in.
Absolutely. So running through those scenarios, it seems like every situation of those pairs where a returning player is up against someone, it seems like they are going to win. Taryn, we talked at the very beginning of the season about how the returning players were at an advantage. We got rid of Frank. We got rid of Devon. There was a moment when, you know, Nicole was a little touch and go. Are we now back at the point where the returning players might have the best chance of winning this thing?
I think so. I think that, as we went through, I think that the people who have the most likely chance of winning are Paul, Nicole, and James. And I think that that's not a coincidence, the fact that Nicole and James are in this position. I think that they both, James last week and Nicole this week, made good moves that were counter to their partner's move that they would have made because their partner was more inexperienced with the game and they knew the game better. Like, even somebody like James, who doesn't know the game very well, the fact this is his second time, he was able to know that, like, this is the right move for us, even though he's so bad at the game that he ruins the move by exposing the fact that they almost voted Corey out. It was still the right move to make in the moment. And I think that because of that knowledge and even just like the status that comes with being a returning player, if you don't throw that away like Frank and Devon did, I think that it really does take you a long way, and I think that that's the reason why they're here, and that's, again, part of the reason why they might have some respect in the end versus their new player counterpart, because these aren't like coaches that were in a very weird spot where they were above the players and they entered the game and they ruined everything. These are just like regular returning players, and for the most part, I haven't heard anything about like, oh, we resent these people, like we saw in Big Brother 14. It's much more like Big Brother 13, where it's like, maybe we're against these people, but we respect them in the end because they're just like us.
I want to segue and talk a little bit about the schedule that was released by CBS a few days ago, because I think we were all a little surprised. I think it's safe to say, I think we were all predicting a double eviction coming up at this point, especially with Victor re-entering the house. But Brent, correct me if I'm wrong, it does not appear we will see a double eviction for the rest of the season.
It doesn't appear that there's going to be, but the house guests are absolutely certain that there is going to be one. I think they'll figure it out by maybe like Final Five, like when Julie calls them in for Final Five and they evict somebody eventually. I mean, like, they're absolutely certain that a double eviction is coming up this week at the Final Six, like once they get Michelle out of the house. James is 99.999% sure of it. Obviously, he's going to be wrong. Wrong again, James. Not going to happen. I don't know why I'm sort of lost as to why. I mean, maybe this is what CBS wanted when they wanted 100 days. They just couldn't fit in another double eviction somewhere. If that was the case, why didn't you just keep Glenn in the house? I don't know.
Alex, I'm just going over the schedule briefly. It seems like after Thursday, we'll be down to 6. A week passes, we'll be down to 5. There's going to be a special Tuesday eviction show, apparently, on September 13th that goes down from 5 to 4, then 4 to 3 on that Wednesday. Then Friday, September 16th, another recap episode. Am I reading that correctly?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, it's probably a recap episode. They're going to like take some other like things that have happened in the season that are funny that we haven't seen. And it's probably going to also show the start of part one of the Head of Household competition. I'm guessing. That's what they've been doing every season. Let's sit around the tiny kitchen table
and remember the time that we remembered the time.
but of all the seasons, why do two recap episodes and unmitigated first for Big Brother, for Big Brother 18? You are eking out an extra 2 inches of crap out of the turd that is this season into the toilet bowl of CBS programming. It makes no sense to me.
Well, Ziggy Marley brought some really, really good stuff over to the CBS lot, and they completely forgot that they already did this. That's what happened.
They're
going to hotbox the Big Brother house so everyone forgets about Ziggy Marley coming out and then bring him out again.
It's so funny to me, though. This is like the point where, like, I mean, it goes so fast here. Like, you go from 6 to 5, and then all of a sudden at 5. 5 is a fast forward week. They, like, quote-unquote surprise the house guests. They do it every season at Final 5. At this point, they should expect it. People like Nicole and James, and who are the super fans in the house, should know that this is coming. Of course, James doesn't know shit. Anyway, so they've surprised them at Final 5. Then like a day later it's like Final 4 and they're quickly down to Final 3. Like, I mean, it goes so fast, and like, you know, most of the time we're spinning our wheels, so this is good times for Big Brother coming up in a week.
You know what? I think the recap episode would have value to me if it was hosted by Baldwin the Eagle, a la Triumph the Insult comic dog, where it's just Victor can be in the house, he can be out of the house, but I just want the puppet in the chair being like, oh, these horrible people, let's remember what happened when Polly talked about Natalie's boobs.
Yeah, like, okay. good times.
Here's the thing that drives me crazy about the recap episodes, where it's like, this is a show that is so prone to having great recap episodes because there's so much unseen footage. There's so many great, funny, personal moments from the show that they could put on these recap episodes as unseen footage. And they do this like with tiny little increments of it, but the rest is just stuff we've already seen on the episodes. There's also tons of unseen strategy stuff. They could shape the narrative in a similar way that they do with the final like recap of the season, where they kind of like talk about the shape of the strategic narrative of the season. They could do this on an entire recap episode and show like real examples of like what happened behind the scenes, stuff you haven't seen yet, stuff that they didn't think was relevant in the early part of the season, but is now very relevant at the end, like a lot of Steve's game in last season. They could show this kind of stuff on this episode, but instead they waste time showing the stuff we've already seen. They're so lazy. Like they can't be bothered to re-edit stuff.
I know, like, you know, it's so funny. You lost me at narrative, actually. Because, like, I started laughing because I'm like, they don't care about the narrative, Tara. Like, well, what show are you watching? Like, this is not a novel. Like, they're not a movie they're going to edit together at the last minute. Like, literally, they don't care. Like, they care about the people who are in the house right now. I mean, I know it's a disservice to the fans. I get it. I'm with you. I wish they would. But there's no way it's going to happen. I mean, it's just not.
Oh, and you never rant about stuff that's never going to happen.
No, you can. I love the fact that you ranted about it. It was great. I was just laughing. I'm like, when you said a narrative, I'm like, I think I could find two people in the editing room, a Big Brother, who don't even know what the word narrative means. Like, it's not going to happen.
Well,
sorry.
Screw that. I have the same feeling about them that you have of like people that are cast for the show that don't want to be there. Because I would edit this show.
I know you would.
Job.
Put this man on the show. He would edit the shit out of it.
No, quick aside, right, so because we do a lot of hating on the edit, and I really wanted to give credit to this from last night's episode. I thought it was one of the funniest editing jobs I'd ever seen. When Nicole is saying, like, I'm just worried, Michelle is such a threat, and then it cuts to her waking up and like,
yeah,
I do agree with that.
One of the undersung editing moments from Big Brother, which I will admit, is the B-roll that they use whenever they mention someone's name. I remember, I think it was in like either Big Brother 11 or 13 or both. Every time they mentioned Jordan's name, it would cut to her eating, which I just thought was like a fantastic runner throughout. So I can't knock the editors too much. Before we start diving into questions, since this is kind of a more conclusive week, I do want to get your guys' thoughts about this season going forward, because again, we're 3/4 of the way through. We are at a C grade, if you will, in terms of our progress meter. I would argue that things have definitely picked up a little bit in the past few weeks, but I'll start with Taryn. Is it too little too late for you? What are your thoughts on the season 75% of the way through?
I thought last season was much better up to this point, and even beyond this point. I thought that last season was a really good one, and even I liked like 16 a lot. I liked 15 for the most part, like the second half of 15 I really liked. So this is probably one of the weaker seasons in recent memory for me, probably since Big Brother 13, for me at least. That said, it has picked up, and I do think that, you know, if Paul and Victor make some sort of like unlikely run to the final two, I think that's a great ending to the season. So it's I don't think it's like bottom tier by any means at this point, where it might have been a few weeks ago, but it's still not like top tier level by any means, and I don't think it can be at this point.
Alex, what do you think?
No, I think that's pretty apt. I'm not as high on 16 as Taryn is, and we've discussed this ad nauseum at this point, but I tend to agree. I mean, this is, you know, 13, you know, I had the same feelings when we were starting this out, that, you know, anytime we're going to mix veterans and new players, you know, we're already kind of skewing the thing. The team twist, not crazy about how that just changed the game for the first, you know, quarter or so. So it's not going to be one of my favorite seasons. But, yeah, certainly there are seasons worse than this. Probably in, like, my, like three quarters of the way down the list or something. I don't know.
I will say that I'm glad that it's not like 16 or like Survivor Africa, where it's just like lambs being led to the slaughter. Like, you know, eventually yeah, the
Africa.
Lambs.
Well, Survivor Africa were goats being led to the slaughter, to be fair. And that was a reward challenge. So.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if Pulley was still running this house, we would be hating life right now.
We would be hating life right now because the people hadn't woken up and realized that they were being led to their own demise. So they did that. Okay. They woke up, they realized that Polly was running the show, that America hated Polly. I don't know if they knew that, but they probably figured that. And they got him out. So that was great. Then things sort of took a wonky turn when Natalie decided to turn her back on fan favorites, you know, to hear the fandom tell it, Victor and Paul. And then it got a little wonky there. So, like, I was like one of those people rooting for Natalie until she turned her back on Victor and Paul. And I'm like, bitch, what are you doing? Like, you had to stick the thing. Like, come on. Like, we were good, and you up and decided to leave. Like, why'd you leave me? You know? But I don't know.
It's funny.
She can win her way back if she performs well at the end here.
It's funny you say that, because I feel like that's the moment that I really got turned on to the season, like even more so than the Poly Week, because like things are like it's not going to just go down to the end, you know, with people doing things against their own best interest. Like people are doing things in their own best interest against, you know, common sense, which I like. And now we're seeing this week with like Nicole playing both sides decently well. Like this is what I'm liking about the season. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Poly thing was big and exciting while it happened, but like we've seen plenty of seasons where a big exciting thing like season 11, for instance, where like a big exciting thing happens and then it's just kind of like, oh, now it's a little boring for the rest of the way down. But I really like where it's gone, even though like I am sort of rooting for Paul. I like the fact that like he is being challenged in these ways, and I like how up in the air this game is. And it's not just based on competitions, it's based on like how you navigate this Mexican standoff, where it's like, you know, like what, who do you shoot at first? You don't know.
So let's start getting into you guys' questions about this week and Big Brother 18 in general. I'm going to start with a question on Twitter from Allison, who says, what would the week look like if James voted out Corey instead of Vic, and therefore Paulie ended up coming back? So let's spin ourselves out, get into the DeLorean, go into another timeline, alternate reality here. Alex, James evicted Corey. As we know, Paulie lasted longer than Corey on the wall. Paulie comes back into this game. What would happen? Let's assume Nicole still won HOH. What is happening this week?
I think the thing that makes the most sense is Paulie just kind of assumes the Corey spot. I mean, Nicole has just lost her number one ally. Paulie is coming in looking for number one ally. Those are two people who were already had a three where they felt like it was them three against the world. That's just going to be a natural fit. I don't see anyone. That's just going to immediately, like magnets, they're just going to come together. And then I think you'd probably have a similar situation where, just like Corey is more inclined to work with Paul and Victor, I think Paulie would be feeling the same way. He feels burned by James, just as Corey did.
I think the only difference is Nicole probably puts up James and Michelle straight up, or even James and Natalie, and we might see James leaving instead of Michelle.
Poet Stephen Fishback asked us to do some de facto power rankings of the remaining seven house guests. I'll just go with six. Let's just count Michelle out right now by their chances to win the game. Brent, give me your rough power rankings, or at least who would be at the top of your list right now?
to win the game, I would put Paul, Nicole, and Victor at the top. Those are the three people that I think have the best chance of winning over a jury of five people on the jury feeling good about putting their key in the box and saying, I'm cool giving you $500,000 and making your life better. I really don't think that they're, I don't think they really want to give it to James, depending on who he's against in the final two. Natalie is going to have a rough go of it. And Corey, girl, bye.
Taryn, are you in agreement there? Do you think that that's a good top three for the power rankings?
I think it's probably Nicole, Paul, James, Victor, Natalie, Corey.
Okay.
Alex, any opinions?
Nicole and Paul for me are like definitely a 1A, 1B, and then it's a gap. Right now, I think I'll put Nicole 1A, Paul 1B, and then like a clear two is James, then Victor, then Corey, then Natalie, I think, right now for me.
So talking about Nicole's game segues into this other question from Ashley Bedazowitz. Have we been too hard on Nicole this season? Didn't she do what Rob says, go to sleep for the first half of the game? Now, I would say that I don't think I'm being too general when I say that I think Nicole has kind of been the punching bag of some jokes on the recaps. Taryn, do you think that Nicole has been playing a good game this season, objectively speaking?
Well, this is my smug moment. I've been saying all season long that people are being too hard on Nicole and her game.
Here comes the I told you so.
I understand that people don't like her, but you know what she was doing in the game wasn't bad for much of the game. And I think we're seeing now that she is capable of making some decent moves. You know, she flips Natalie and James against Paul and Victor last week and then uses that to team up with Paul and Victor this week to take out her biggest threat in Michelle. And then next week she's looking at a potential to being able to play the middle with two pairs going after each other and leaving her on the sidelines. So this is some great maneuvering by Nicole. And you know, again, like, people have not liked her for a long time, and I can't say I blame them, because what she's been doing with Corey has just been super obnoxious. But what she's been doing in the game has been pretty good. You know, she played very timidly, very much like Andy for a lot of his season. And I think that people didn't like the timidity of Andy's game in the same way that they don't like Nicole's game.
Right.
You know, they called her Rat Cole. Like, what? How much more of an Andy comparison do you
when
need to get?
When there's a fight in the kitchen, you run and hide in the bathroom. That is the Andy 101 right there.
Yeah, and she ran and tattled on all her friends, and like, everybody hated it. They said what a terrible game player she is, but it wasn't about game that they weren't liking. It was about the fact that she was doing these things that they didn't like. And what she was doing was endearing herself to the right people at the right time, and then those people went home, and now she's in a position to take it to the end of the game and still possibly win. So I really think that she's doing decently well. That said, there's a lot of stuff that she's still doing bad. Now,
oh,
I don't
good.
Want, I don't
I'm
want
glad
people
you're
to
still
start,
on the fence. Yeah, the
I don't
fence,
want, it's not about being on the
here.
Fence. It's about being consistent, Brent. You know about being consistent.
I thought you took a stand for a second. I was like, I was going to be floored, and I'm like, oh my God, he's still on the fence. Thank God. Okay, good.
Well,
cool
there
now.
Was there's definitely a couple moments early on, right, where Nicole could have gotten screwed, like the whole Tiffany, Frank, Davon quagmire, where like Nicole's name is constantly being brought into it as like, Nicole's telling me this, she's telling you that, like that really could have come back on her earlier on. And it's pretty impressive that it didn't, that she was able to escape all that unscathed and everyone forgot about it, you know. So that was, I think, a big thing that we didn't talk about enough at the time.
Yeah, and like as I was going to say, like just because she's now in this great position doesn't mean that we should ignore all of her faults before and that we should start overrating her game. I think that it's locked in a place where she's like, she's a good player. And I think that a lot of that's coming from the fact that she's a returning player. She has experience, she has knowledge, and she had this benefit of coming in as this returning player with this advantage that was given to her. And she's played it well, and she's used it well. That doesn't mean she's like top tier by any means, but she's definitely not like the worst player of all time, like many people were saying. And this has been the note that I've been saying all season long, even if Brent doesn't like the fact that I'm consistent.
Yeah, capable player in a weak house. I mean, that's plenty.
I would have felt incomplete if I did not see at least some modicum of Taryn versus Brent when I guest hosted on the
Well, yeah,
hour.
Exactly. I didn't even get to say my piece on this because Taryn kept going on about how like
I'll see the floor to you then, Mr. Wolgamott. Go ahead.
Oh gosh. Well, I just say it's like it's fine. Like I mean, I'm with you in the terms of like Nicole. Sure, she's a good player. Is she a good player? Fine. She's a good player. If sitting in the bedroom with Corey and saying that this is the guy she wants to live happily ever after with, and saying that he deserves to win the money over her is a good player, then fine, you can call her a good player. I mean, look, has she done some good things here at the end? Yes. Is it good TV? No. Is it scintillating to watch? No. I know you guys don't care about that, but that's an aspect of why people don't like Nicole. Okay?
That's what I was saying.
Thank you. I know, right? It just okay. When you compared Nicole to Andy, I about lost my shit. Like, what?
People
like,
hate Andy too.
Andy never fell for anybody. He never put his game in danger because of some boy. Like, he always knew where all the pieces on the board were. Nicole has been surprised many a time. Her name's been brought up way more than Andy's ever was. Like, come on. Andy's like on the Mount Rushmore of rats. Nicole is like at the bottom scurrying around somewhere. Don't even compare the two.
Oh, I'm comparing them in how the audience reacted to them because I was talking about that. I wasn't ignoring it. I'm saying that everybody hated Andy in the same way that everybody hated Nicole. And I'd argue that people hated Andy more than they hate Nicole because even the casual audience hated Andy, where the casual audience doesn't hate Nicole as much. So like, honestly, I think Andy was even more hated, which makes the comparison even more apt.
The girl still has yet to be nominated. You got to give her that.
I also found out that James has yet to be nominated. And I kind of didn't know that. Like, I knew Nicole had never been nominated before, but like James also hasn't been nominated. I'm like, oh, wow, really? And then I had to go look at it. And I was like,
if one of them makes it to the end and we're saying, okay, let's talk about the players that have never been nominated before. Danielle and Jason from Big Brother 3, Derek. Oh yeah. And Nicole or James from Big Brother 18.
Darkest timeline.
Well, it goes to show how that statistic isn't the most meaningful statistic in the world.
Hot take from Brent that Nicole does not belong on a Mount Ratchmore with Andy. That we're still looking for players to say that.
Thank you.
Speaking of the RuPaul podcast, I hear that that you talked about me a lot because you got into arguments with other people and that you seem to be the constant in all these arguments.
We have found a Taryn on our RuPaul's podcast in the form of Ally Lasher. So your spirit follows us wherever reality show may be talked about.
Yeah, she I'm likes saying, to say "I told you so." She likes to sit on the fence.
I'm just saying, I don't get into arguments with Lita. I'm just saying, like, I don't seem to be the constant in all these.
So you're saying it's a me problem, not a you problem. I hear what you're saying.
Couples counseling right now, and not even with my own wife.
Takes two to tango, as my peer mediator would tell me.
I have a question. I have a question.
So you go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about this because Taryn was on the show last night and I went to talk about this. And I don't know how Phantom feels about this. I'm kind of curious to see what the chat room has to say. But I was not the biggest fan of Glenn on the podcast last night. I mean, was it fun to have Glenn on the podcast last night? Yes, it was fun to have Glenn on the podcast last night. But boy, honey, to hear him tell it. I mean, he had this game won. Like, he was going straight to the finish line. Like, I'm so tired of hearing about his strategic bed placement and how he thought of where he was going to put his bed and how he's going to do this and who he already had his six and he was going to take HOH, no questions asked. Like, give it to me. I'm going to take it. Like, I think Nicole would have had something to say about that and Tiffany would have been in the deciding vote. Like, I don't want to hear from him how he thinks he would have won the game. Like, and then he went on about, well, if they wouldn't have given me the balance challenge and if they would have done this, and if they would have come to my house and let me know a month before, I would have lost 20 pounds so I could look like some of these kids. So I'm basically like, if the world was the way that you wanted it to be, then you would have won Big Brother. Bitch, shut up. Like, no. You don't get to design the universe that you play in. You take the game as they give it to you. You lost. Hush.
I'll be honest, that's what I found fun about it is I knew that this guy was not going to be the epitome of strategic thinking and analysis on the game. This is like, I'd still call Jordan's podcast with Pop and Paul Jackson from Big Brother Canada 4 as the height of delusional podcast.
What about Vanessa's Victoria's interview?
Yeah, but that's like the type of stuff. I feel like when you go in there, like, you know what Glenn is going to provide. And he provided for me in the aspects that I wanted him to, which is his delusion of, you know, if I was the first HOH, this is what I would do. His, you know, careful plotting and planning. It was that stuff that made me like Glenn as an over-the-top character the first time, so I enjoyed it personally.
You guys, if CBS, if they had made sure that ifs and buts was candies and nuts, we could have all had a Merry Christmas. But no, not for Glenn.
I love how, like, this is, he was there for like 36 hours and he's talking about his bed. And then again, I have to hear about how he strategically picked this bed. And I'm like, I heard this like 7 weeks ago. I know, but it was just infuriating. Like, you're no one. You are.
Oh, come on. He is the most screwed player in Big Brother history. You can't, man. You get to take this away from him too.
That would be Nicole, right? At the moment.
He's got a full. He's got a full 30 hours of deep analytical insight into these players' inner psyches. All right, he could provide some serious.
All right. Well, I just wanted to bring that up. I have like a light moment with Glenn. You know, it was like me watching the podcast last night. I was literally yelling at my computer screen the entire time. I'm glad I wasn't on there because I probably would have been a little disrespectful to him.
All right. And so, for the record, I think Glenn would have had that first HOH. Nicole was very timid about wanting to go after it. So I think if he had spoken up strongly, I think that he probably would have had it.
Nicole, it's mine.
I don't think so. I think she would have sensed there's danger here. You need to take, like, if Corey's not there, I think she becomes a lot more assertive and Tiffany has to decide. And I say Tiffany goes with Nicole.
Really? Because I felt like Tiffany was sort of on board with the new players at first.
I think she goes with Nicole. I really do. But okay. It's an alternate universe.
I also love hearing Glenn on the podcast because I love Rob to death, but he adds so much gravel to every Glenn impression. It sounds like Brian Doyle Murray is coming onto Big Brother and talking about the game. I'm going to segue from Glenn, unfortunately, and I already hear the boos from the listeners and me doing so. Alec, at Jeff Loves Pizza asks, if James and Natalie caught wind of Nicole's plan to vote out Meech, how much effort campaigning for her would they do? So let's say that, you know, James and Natalie somehow find out, oh, it looks like Michelle is going to go. Do you think they're going to do any sort of campaign to get Paul out, or are they just going to try to put their effort into planning for next week?
I think as far as Natalie trying to do anything, the problem there is that her relationship with Nicole and Corey has always been James as the linchpin. Like, whereas with Victor and Paul, she's got a relationship with both those guys. It's really only James that has maintained all this time the relationship with Nicole and Corey. And Natalie is like, stays downstairs in the London bedroom waiting for James to like tell her what the story is with their conversation. So Natalie doesn't really have the background to, you know, do any kind of legwork there. James, I could definitely see, you know, James, I think totally thinks Nicole is, you know, is on his team right now. So I think James would have kind of a what the hell moment and then try to do some talking about it. But I also don't think he would blow up his or Natalie's games for Michelle. He's not someone that is very confrontational. He's someone that is usually going to try to accomplish his way by, you know, more passive means. So I think if it seems like Nicole is very adamant she's going to get rid of Michelle rather than risk Nicole's ire, James is probably not so committed to Michelle at this point. He's really looking to protect himself and his girl.
Yeah, he'll do the typical James campaigning, which will be just like, oh, well, man, it feels like the right thing to do would be to get rid of Paul because, you know, he's the bigger threat. And he'd try to make some arguments and Nicole probably won't bite on anything. And he'll be like, you know what? You know, it's your decision. Like, I'll totally go with it, because ultimately there's really nothing he can do at this point. Like, the cast has been set in stone and like there's nothing. He's got two votes and he's not flipping Victor. So like,
yeah, what I was going to say was, like, I think that what's going to happen is that Nicole and Corey are not going to give James and Natalie and Michelle enough time. Like, you know, we've seen it before where people say, oh, I'm going to tell him that we're going to evict him. But usually it's like right before the eviction. Like, there's usually no time whatsoever. It's incumbent upon James and Natalie and Michelle to talk to Nicole. Like, literally, I was listening to them earlier today and Michelle was talking about going up and talking to Nicole, making sure that she's not the target. And James was like, well, don't say anything weird because you don't want to scare her, you know? Like, I mean, like, it's the worst Big Brother playing. It's such buffoonery on James's part because, like Rob said in his tweet, like, James's style of playing is like, just don't say anything. weird, and then it won't come true. Like, so as long as they don't,
he's Captain Camo. He's all about hiding in the background and not paying exactly attention.
So I don't think, again, I don't think that Nicole and Corey are going to give James and Natalie and Michelle enough of a time to argue. I think they're going to try to tell them right before the eviction. If, on the other hand, James or Michelle goes to Nicole on Wednesday, let's say, or even Tuesday night, and says, so who is the target? Because he wants to ask her who is the target, but he wants to wait a little bit. Okay. If Nicole then gives him the answer and says, well, Michelle has been bringing up my name and I kind of want her gone, that may be enough time for James to argue something. I agree with Taryn. He'll probably just acquiesce. But the more time that they have noticed that Michelle is going, the more I worry for Paul that somehow James might be able to swing something to flip Nicole. But I hope not, but I do worry about it.
Yeah, and to James's credit, like he intentionally waited until after the veto to say anything because he didn't want to, you know, accidentally say the wrong thing to Nicole, who is very wishy-washy, and then find himself or Natalie up on the block, which I think is a decently smart thing to do. But, you know, that said, like here's what I want to see from Nicole, right? When she, because I do need her to talk to James and Natalie about the fact that Michelle's going home. What I want to see happen is, you know, Michelle finally has a talk with Nicole, and you know, Nicole can kind of be a little bit, you know, a little bit aggressive in that conversation, draw something out of Michelle, and then have a conversation with James and Natalie saying, look, I just had a conversation with Michelle and it just seems like she's still after me and I don't know what to do about it. Like, I kind of feel like I want Michelle gone now, and make it seem like it's something that just kind of came up, and that's instead of like a plan that they've been out of the loop on. And then, like, even if they don't fully believe it, the story is there. There's enough doubt that they're probably going to go into next week thinking, like, okay, that the fact that we have a little bit of doubt, we might still be able to work with Corey and Nicole, and Victor and Paul are a bigger threat. We really need to go after Paul and Victor instead. I'm hoping that she doesn't just say, like, listen, the plan has been Michelle all along. I'm sorry I didn't tell you. Like, we'll see, right? Like, we'll see if she's more of like the James where she makes the right decision, but the execution is terrible, or if she's more of somebody else where like she can actually pull the execution off as well.
Turning towards next week, Sean asks us, so the best move for Paul is to turn James and Natalie and Nicole and Corey against each other for next week, right? How can he go about doing that? Alex, let's put ourselves in Paul's beard, if you will. How can he help turn the other two pairs against each other next week?
Well, I think it definitely starts with the, you know, it seemed like Nicole was able to do it very easily to Natalie. I mean, Natalie didn't even fact check her. So I think it's not out of the realm of possibility, certainly. It needs to come from sowing seeds of distrust the way he's done in the past. And really just kind of, selling the idea that Nicole was always going after Meech, that she was lying anytime she was planning on coming after me, that we always had a deal. You guys saw us. We've been hanging out together for the last 2 weeks. What, you think this isn't like, you think they haven't committed to Final Four with us? They absolutely have. They've committed to you guys. They've committed to us. Like, they're the only ones that are clearly trying to make deals on both sides right now. Like, there are arguments to be made here, and they all pretty much stem from making Nicole and Corey seem like they're trying to play both sides to James and Natalie, and making James and Natalie seem like they're trying to play both sides to Nicole and Corey.
Yeah, and I think the important part here is that I don't think he should do any of this week. Like, you know, I talked last week about how his move didn't work because he didn't put enough groundwork in. This is almost the opposite, where like, you can't put in groundwork right now because you can't afford it. If Nicole catches any wind of him making any sort of deal with, and even just talking to Natalie and James will set her off. Like, he doesn't need to do anything that jeopardizes his safety this week. Next week, if they win, he can say, look, I was working with them. He can rat them out completely and then hope that might do something for him. And what really they should be doing is, like, Nicole and Corey, they were fine with Victor kind of playing both sides because they were aware. They were like, hey, well, you guys will allow us to play both sides. We'll keep Victor's cover intact. But Victor just hasn't been doing it. And I feel like that's a big missed opportunity here to lay some groundwork without having any sort of without having too much blowback. Again, like, Nicole is still a little bit paranoid of Victor, even though he hasn't even been doing any of that. But ultimately, I think she would still stick to the plan. It's just like, I need Paul and Victor to be a little more cautious about going into next week, and very, very willing to throw anybody under the bus that they need to, because it's going to be a very dangerous spot for them, even if they win.
Yeah, even if they win, I agree.
Yeah, and ideally, Victor would be spending a lot more time like in that London room where James and Natalie are spending all their time, just third wheeling it, doing what Nicole and Corey were bothered by before, where he'd just jump in bed in the middle of them. Like, that should be his move right now. He should definitely be like forcing that three.
He should be the Big Brother cock block, essentially.
Yes, yes, that's his role, and it's gotten him this far.
Mr. Komodo asks, and domo arigato, Mr. Komodo, for your question. Paul has thrown all his chips on the table, agreeing to be a pawn. Is this what is needed for him to win the game? So, Brent, we saw on Sunday, Paul said, I'm fine with being a pawn. We've seen that he did this. You know, he tried to do the same conversation with Davon with a different type of results. Do you think this is going to help Paul's resume in the end or hurt him?
I don't know that it's going to help or hurt. I agree this was the move that needed to be made. I think this was the one that gave Nicole the most peace of mind, because she's able to change her mind if anything wonky happens at the end. The fact that he's willing to go on the block, and he said he was willing to go on the block, should let her know that they trust Nicole and Corey, because Nicole is somebody who, as Taryn and Alex have correctly noted, is so wishy-washy. She's liable to change her mind at the drop of a hat. So, like, the fact that he's on the block as a constant option to be evicted, I think it shows some balls and shows some willingness to play the game at its high. Like, I mean, it's tough to sit on the block and not be paranoid, not be worried, not to do something that screws up your game. Okay. So I agree that it's probably his best option. I don't want to say best option. I agree that it's probably a good option in order to further himself in the game. I don't love any player sitting up on the block, but I think this is what he had to do. There was really no other choice. And you saw him push a little bit in terms of, well, you could put James on the block and, you know, totally blow him up, and because they've been backstabbing you, you could do this, you could do that. It would be a good reason. And Nicole was sort of reticent to go that way. So he backed off immediately and said, you know, I'm totally cool. Yeah, exactly. And Paul can be very, like I said, Paul can be very overbearing at times. It can, like, all that strategy and talk and bullshit coming out of his mouth can really, like, frighten people, especially people like Nicole, who are pretty timid players. So the fact that he backed off at least shows some self-awareness and perception.
I do think that if he survives this week on the block, like, if he survives, it could be a point in his favor come the final two, just because it might add to this mythos of, like, you know, Paul was on the block and he survived again. Like, what, like, how did he survive against Michelle of all people? Like, whereas, like, if he wasn't up on the block and Nicole had just taken a shot at James and Michelle or something like that, the credit may have extended to Victor in some way. But this is another thing where it's like, it singles out Paul and it says, look at what Paul is doing. He managed to survive this week, which could be a benefit to his game. Also, obviously, this isn't something that he, like, planned for, but I think it is something that could benefit his game unintentionally when it comes to the final two.
I wanted to bring up really quickly, just Mike, because we talked about this on the podcast before. Sorry to interrupt you. I said, I think even Taryn said that it would take a really specific circumstance to get somebody like Michelle out. I know I talked about it. And it's so funny because it happened with Nikki in Big Brother. It happened with Peely in Big Brother Canada 3 and Nikki in Big Brother Canada 4, where you have these seemingly useless players that you want to pencil in as somebody who goes to the final three, final two. And it takes a really special circumstance for them to be evicted. And I think it happened again this season where Michelle, like, for all intents and purposes, there's no way that Paul should be able to survive being on the block against Michelle. But Michelle dropped the ball. She started hanging out with Natalie and James, made themselves an obvious three. The one person who didn't like Michelle and whose name Michelle has been bandying about as a possible eviction person, Nicole, wins head of household. It took such a special circumstance for Michelle to find herself in danger here. A little unlucky, but also she really dropped the ball and she has no one to blame for herself if she's evicted this week.
It reminds me of Rob's season of Survivor in Amazon, where they get rid of Christy Smith. It's like, how did this happen? How did Christy Smith end up going out here? But it's like, right, well, you know, nobody cares about keeping you, then, you know, it's not necessarily no one's gonna put up a fight for you. You know what I mean? No one else is going to bat for you.
It's a double-edged sword with not being tightly affiliated with one person, especially within a game of pairs. I think a lot of comparisons were made to, you know, Kathy Vavrick O'Brien in Survivor Marquesas, and even when you guys were talking about back in the earlier parts of the season of Davon refusing to be the fifth wheel in that alliance, there is power in there. At the same time, these stars could align in a certain way that has happened, as Brett mentioned here, with Nikki Graham, with Peely, where especially as you get later into the game and challenges become more and more important because there are less and less people to hide behind, things could happen that end up in your eviction. And I do think it's actually interesting going back to what you guys were just talking about before that, about how it seems like this week we have been seeing, you know, a classic case of almost overplaying and underplaying, in that Paul and Victor have been up the asses of Corey and Nicole, arguably pissing them off sometimes, whereas James and Natalie have sort of hidden in the shadows. I would call it a Goofus and Gallant, but it's sort of like a Goofus and Goofus case where nobody really seems to be doing anything that right.
Goofus and Goofuser?
Yes, exactly. Coming soon to an airplane near you. Let's talk a little bit about America's favorite player, because I feel like with Corey winning this care package, things have become a little more interesting. Again, I know we talked about this a little bit when I was on with Taryn and Rob before, but I would love to hear from you guys, each of you, who you think your top three will be for America's favorite house guest. Brent, we'll start with you, since I know you've been talking about how James has been mentioning it's his, basically the check is signed, sealed, delivered at this point. Who do you think is going to be your top three? And is James anywhere close to it?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. The casuals seem to love James. I think it would probably be like something like James, Natalie, and Nicole. I think that would probably be like, and we assume all of these people are not in the final two, okay? Like, whoever gets to the final two, like, Big Brother's never said this specifically, but you can't tell me that Frank had more votes than Dan or Ian during Big Brother 14. Like, if you make the final two, you're not eligible for Big Brother's America's Favorite House Guest, okay? That's just how I understand it. So obviously, who gets to the final two is really going to upset the apple cart, but I do think that America's Favorite Player will probably come from those three people. I mean, I would like it to be Paul. Maybe Paul can win a vote with like 15 other people. Maybe he can get, you know, 15% of the vote. Maybe that's the way he can finally win. I don't know, but it seems odd to me that he hasn't won any of these America's Care packages, rather. But on the other hand, those votes are a little bit more wonky because there are fewer players involved. If it's spread out among 16 people, I got to think that Paul at least has a decent shot. But I'm reticent to say whether or not he would get top three. I hope James doesn't, because James is, like I alluded to previously on the podcast, I'm sure everybody who's in the chat room right now hates him for it. Said that, well, I'm sure Julie's going to call my name as one of the top three people who are at least in the running. Like, shut up, dude. Like, I literally wanted to tell him to go to hell, because, like, I mean, saying stuff like that makes me hate you all the more. I wish the casuals wouldn't vote for him, but you kind of know they're gonna.
It is irritating to listen. Like, James and Natalie do a lot of begging for the cameras. I've never seen a season like this where two people are so just like they'll be having a disagreement. Natalie will be like, "You heard him, America," or like, you know, that kind of thing. It just like gets on my nerves, man. Like, but we don't care about your personal squabble. This is what happens
when we introduce America votes all the time.
We're watching for a game. Sorry.
But Taryn brings up a great point. That's exactly what happens when you bring in care packages and constant votes that are based on America. You feel like, oh, the people that get more, you know, camera time and get more popularity as a result are those who sort of play up to America. They had Team America exist 2 years ago that functioned as a sort of way to funnel that. So I think that it's a cringeworthy activity, but at the same time, it's kind of become a necessary strategy to help you win that sort of aspect of the game.
Yeah, well, they clearly wanted the Hunger Games to recreate the Hunger Games scene where Katniss is like begging the sky for water, and then somebody like drops the like spile or whatever the thing is that lets her like drink out of a tree. So like she gets the care package in Hunger Games. Like, clearly CBS was dying to try to recreate that, but like,
oh, I have to, that, I have to
that's
drink
life
water
and death
out of the tree.
Stupid. Like, I just can't get behind it.
I've been terrible at predicting who's going to win America votes, American votes, all this whole season long. But I really think it might be James that wins America's Favorite Player. I think it'll come down to James or Natalie. And I think that James has sort of been in the edit a little more likable than Natalie lately, because Natalie's kind of been like, oh, like, James, why didn't you win that HOH? And James is just kind of like, I'm sorry.
Taryn, I think I speak for all three of us when I say, by a vote of 3-0, you have just been evicted from the podcast. Girl, bye.
Hey, if you have any sort of superstition, then you should be thanking me for saying this, because I've been wrong every single time I've guessed.
All right, good. All right.
Win a vote.
All right, better.
I do think it'll probably be Natalie. I think there's going to be all these Natalie fans that'll vote for Natalie, and then there's going to be a contingent of James fans that are like, hoping that if Natalie wins America's Favorite Player, it might like make it more likely that they'll be together after the show. So then they'll vote for Natalie instead of James. Well, it makes sense in my head, Taryn.
We cannot let America play matchmaker, Alex. This is why America didn't work.
But then think about all the buyer's remorse strategy in 2 months when they're no longer together and people are just saying like, but I voted for Natalie so that America's favorite players would make America's favorite baby.
And, dude, it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
America's favorite baby sounds like the worst like LinkedIn headline I've ever seen in my life.
Rachel would chime in and be like, excuse me, Aurora Borealis.
Thank you.
I want to talk for a second about the adult doll. Adult doll sounds much worse. The drone package that flew over. And I was so surprised. Jennifer from Big Brother 6 making an appearance on Big Brother 18. I did not realize that we'd see a cameo like that. But well, if no we could see Joy, Jennifer.
No one looked more surprised than the doll, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, it was a very surprise doll. Have the house guests done any more searching into it, Brent? Are they driving themselves mad trying to figure out what the message is?
Like, they're not really caring at this point. Like, my favorite was Natalie. Like, she's forever the victim. Like, she was like, yeah, I'm sure that doll was about me. They were making fun of my body. Like, I'm like, girl, this was not about you. Shut up. Sorry. I do get annoyed with Natalie. I get so funny because I loved her 2 weeks ago, but lately she's really been getting on my nerves. Like, all of her victimhood, she's always the one being attacked. She's always the one being put upon by people in the house. And Paul talked about in one of his monologues, she's always telling people about all the good works that she does and what a good person she is. And Paul correctly knows, you know, if you got to tell people all the time how much of a good person you are, you're probably not that good of a person. I'm not tagging her character. I'm sure she's a lovely lady, but it does get a little old hearing that all the time.
Spending too much time with Meech and no one else lately, I think. She's like drowning in a sea of negativity these days.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree.
Taryn, do we know as an online community what the message means? I'm pretty sure everyone thought it meant, you know, Joker's Updates thinks season 18 is number one, but has anyone actually stepped forward and said, you know, I was the one that sent the drone in?
Not that I've seen. I think there was somebody that was saying that had like the posted the pictures and stuff. But I don't think they've said what it means as far as I'm aware. The house guests thought it meant plenty of things. Like they were sure that there was a T on there. Nicole was afraid that it was ratting them out, to James and Natalie. She was afraid that it was going to say for her to do something else. And she was like, well, you know, if I see something, tell me to do something, I'm just going to do the opposite. So,
right. She also worried about the fact that, you know, did it say something important? Because during Big Brother 16, there was something that somebody, I can't remember what, but it was exposed that Derek was a cop. He was an undercover detective, and she totally blew it off, and she beats herself up about that. Of course, I don't think she could have done anything about it anyway, but like, she never had any power, but she was scared that this may have been another message that she blows off that really could, you know, change her game if she listened to it. But the problem is they don't know what it said. So they're just left to guess.
Yeah, the thing was so vague. It reminded me of like at the start of season 2 of Game of Thrones, you have that like red comet in the sky and they cut from like group to group and everyone's interpreting it as a different sign of a different thing. Like, oh, it's red for the blood of our family that has been betrayed. Oh, it's red for our colors and our victory. Oh, it's red for dragons. Oh, it's other thing. And that's what's
wants now.
Yeah, and that's what's going on here with this. Like, everyone's interpretation is a look into their psyche. Like, Nicole is sure it's a sign that she's going to get screwed somehow because Nicole is always terrified she's going to get screwed somehow. Like, it's really great to listen to these people speculate. And, of course, like, the first place they go is always, like, some internal, like, lingering stuff that they've got going on that they carry with them. So I enjoy that.
Well, I can't wait until Big Brother 19 when somebody throws dildos over the fence with letters written on them that they have to arrange into a message. It's going
to
be.
Is this a sign I need to stop hooking up in the house?
Yeah, that's it's basically that sort of sign. To start wrapping things up, I want to go down the line. And since Taryn absolutely loves predictions, I would love for you guys to lock in your picks. Who's winning HOH? Who's going home this week? Taryn, we'll start with you.
You know, it's probably going to be a mental competition, and I've seen James and Natalie studying more than I've seen Paul and Victor studying right now, which kind of makes me worried. I could honestly see a Natalie HOH and then target Paul and Victor and you know, we might see Paul go home, which is not what I want to see necessarily, but I'm afraid it might be one of the more likely scenarios.
Well, I hope your predictions keep being wrong then, because I'm predicting a Paul head of household and Victor will win the veto. They have all the power and they get to decide who goes home. James, see you later. Alex?
That's a little best case, worst case. I guess that's as per usual, I'm going to fall somewhere in the middle. I'll say Corey wins.
Okay.
Out of nowhere.
Interesting.
And
one.
Then and then it becomes a situation where they have the choice, but of course it's Corey. Corey likes to work with sausage, and Corey will put up James and Natalie.
Oh, all right, gentlemen, LFC, any last minute questions or comments before we start wrapping this up?
Let's wrap it up.
I will say again that I do this American Ninja Warrior podcast. And, you know, tonight in about 6 minutes, if you're watching live or you can check out later. It was on at 8 on Monday. The National Vegas Finals for American Ninja Warrior have started. This is a great place to start watching. If you haven't checked it out yet, just give it an episode or two. It's really fun. You don't need to have seen the rest of it. Check out our podcast. I do one with Lita, who is the News AF intern. She is fantastic and very funny. I don't know why she hangs out with me. She's too talented for it, but it's a lot of fun, and you can check us out the American Ninja Warrior Rehap Up page. It would mean a lot to me if you at least gave it a shot and let me know what you thought of it. So check it out.
All right. And while we're continuing to do these plugs, I do implore the chat room to please provide us with hashtags, family friendly hashtags. I don't know how much fodder we gave you for the non-family friendly variety, but let's see if we can get this going. Brent, I'm sure you have a podcast you'd like to plug as well.
Oh gosh, yes, I do actually. Like this guy named Mike Bloom is hosting this podcast with me, and Ali Lasher named RuPaul's. It's the RuCap. It's RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 2, where they're voting each other off the island. If you haven't heard, RuPaul's not deciding who goes home anymore. The queens themselves are deciding, so it's much more fun, much more strategic. I like it. The first episode was absolutely balls out. I loved it. I loved every minute of it, and it's airing on Thursdays. Our podcast just dropped last night, I believe, or late Sunday night or early Monday morning, whatever you want to say. And Ali and I and Mike had a great time. So please listen to us and leave some feedback on Twitter for Rob so he knows you're listening. And that's all I got to say, Mike.
And Alex, I know you are doing some stuff on post-show recaps as well, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I actually just posted in the off-topic patron group in our Robbins Podcast Facebook that we just this morning recorded season 2, episode 9, me, Rob Sestrino, and Josh Wiggler of Fear the Walking Dead. I think, you know, it's a series that a lot of people aren't enjoying as much as the original, but I feel like our podcast, at least so far, this back half of the season with me and Rob and Josh are a lot of fun. So even if you're just hate watching the Fear the Walking Dead and then want to come on and laugh about it with us, I think it's a good time.
Absolutely. So you can check out all of these guys on Twitter. Taryn is at Armstrong Taryn. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. Alex is at Alex Kidwell. I am at a Mike Bloom type. As Brent said, check out our RuPaul's Drag Race recap or RuCap as it will. I will also be substituting on the Amazing Race Canada podcast. So a lot of Mike Bloom on reality TV Rehap Ups. Not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is certainly a thing. And speaking of post-show recaps, if you guys happen to be Lost fans, Lost Lives is back again. I got together with Josh Wiggler this week to talk about the various parodies that existed of Lost. It was a lot of fun. And even if you're listening to this in the archives, it actually might be in your podcatcher of choice. But speaking of reality TV Rehap Ups, if you are not already, please make sure you are subscribed. You can subscribe to the reality TV Rehap Ups general feed at robhasawebsite.com/Rehap Ups, RHAPUPS. So not only can you get this podcast, but also the aforementioned American Ninja Warrior, RuPaul's Drag Race, Amazing Race Canada, Bachelor in Paradise. Reality TV is back in full force in the fall, and so are we. So we are here for your listening pleasure. If you want to subscribe to the Rehappy Hour only feed, go to robhasawebsite.com/Rehappy Hour. I have no 5-star review to read, but I know that there is a contest involving Jordan doing a Skype interview with one lucky listener. And I'm going to throw it to Brent for his now weekly encouragement to the listeners to please rate and review the podcast.
Yes, get into iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to our feed. I'm not just saying this for real. Like, this really helps us out. If you guys want to help us out and you like us and you love me or you love Taryn or you love Alex or you love JP or you love Mike Bloom, please get on there and leave us some feedback in the iTunes. Leave us a review. Leave us 5 stars. Tell us that you loved us or tell us that you hated us. Just give us some engagement. We love that. If you want to give us some feedback, you can always hit us up on Twitter. But definitely leave something on iTunes because it really helps us out.
Love you.
Should they? I know they used a Brent is right message last time, and I'll admit I want to have a little bit of fun here. I know Jordan Parhar is a big Simpsons fan, so if you have been encouraged by Brent's plea and you want to write a review, if you're doing it based on this podcast, make the subject line "Purple Monkey Dishwasher." I think that'll just be a nice sign to us all that you were listening to this podcast.
And yes,
it's the color of shirt I'm wearing.
Krabappel.
I suppose
I've been calling her Crandall for years.
Oh boy, there is no Nicole and Corey were kissing in the closet and they were making babies and the baby looked at me. those are my words, nobody else's. It looks like the chat room is rather torn in terms of hashtags. Here are a few that I have. We have Mount Rushmore, as
that's
Alex
what
said.
I liked, yeah.
We have let's see, Depend on Devon, Friend Shack. Anything piquing your interest, guys?
I'm cool with either. Use any one of those to let us know that you were listening. But Mount Rushmore, I think that's hilarious. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So that is going to do it for this week on the Reality TV Happy Hour. Guys, thank you so much for allowing me onto this podcast. I had a lot of fun talking for 10 minutes about Glenn Garcia's podcast.
Right, I know, right?
Great stuff on Big Brother 18.
Podcast
and no matter
commentary on podcast commentary.
It's so meta. Truly... We're past the looking glass here, people. No matter what course the season may take, I think I speak on behalf of the listening audience when I say you guys are absolutely killing it, and I look forward to listening to you next week here with Jordan Parhar, same time, same place. That's going to do it for this week. For Alex Kidwell, Brent Wolgamott, Taryn Armstrong, I am Mike Bloom. Hashtag Mount Rushmore. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye. Happy hour. Reality TV, we're happy hour.